This is James Corbett welcoming you back to CorbettReport.com. It's currently the 16th of April 2010 here in Japan and the 15th of April in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Stuart Rhodes, a former U.S. Army paratrooper and former staffer for Congressman Ron Paul. He is the founder of the Oath Keepers, an organization with over 6,000 dues-paying members. Mr. Rhodes, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today on the Corbett Report.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Rhodes, as you know, there have been a number of attempts to define your organization and its mission in the establishment media lately, but none of the ones that I have seen lately so far seem to be particularly honest or fair in their treatment of you. So rather than putting words in your mouth or simply assuming what your group is all about, why don't we hear from you directly what the Oath Keepers organization is and how you came to found it?
Well, the bottom line is it's a very simple message. It's simply that those who are currently serving military and police all have sworn an oath to defend the Constitution. And that oath itself comes right out of Article 6 of the Constitution, a requirement that all officers at every level of government, from the federal level down to the state level, right down to the local dog catcher, all have an obligation to take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And we want to teach them about this oath and also about the Constitution they swore an oath to defend. The military gets training in obeying the laws of war and refusing unlawful orders that violate the laws of war. But they don't get training in the Constitution, at least not sufficient training. And because of the increasing use of the military here domestically, such as through NORTHCOM now, you have a Northern Command, and you have, I believe it's the 3rd Infantry Division has its combat brigade committed to being used here in the United States. With that increase of domestic application of the military, I felt it was necessary to have some very explicit training on the Constitution for the military and for the police so that they would refuse unlawful orders that violate the Constitution to the same degree that they would refuse orders that violated the laws of war. So that's our mission, is to teach them about the Constitution and encourage them to refuse unlawful orders that violate the Constitution.
So do you think there's always been a need for this type of organization, or is there more of a need at this point in history?
Well, I think it would have helped if during the internment of the Japanese Americans, for example, there had been, you know, a lot of education on the Constitution and an increased chance of the military disobeying orders to intern American citizens because of their skin color. It certainly would have been nice then. It might have also helped during Kent State, for example. So there are, you know, would have been good to have it in the past. But as I said, post 9/11, there's been a great increase in the claimed authority of the presidency to use the military domestically, and also a great increase in the infrastructure for such use. And I said earlier, I pointed to NORTHCOM. This is the first time you've had a command dedicated to the continental United States for the standing military. That's it's crossing the Rubicon in a big way to contemplate using military power and force here at home. I'm not talking about the National Guard, we're talking about the standing army. And in particular, during the Bush years, it was a claim that the president had almost an unlimited power to apply his Article II powers as commander-in-chief here at home, just as though he were on a foreign battlefield. And that was the justification for the NSA spying, claim that he, as a commander-in-chief, he may surveil the battlefield. And the claim was that the United States itself was now part of the battlefield in the war on terror. So, and also the claim, but the most shocking one, of course, was the claim that the president could detain anyone, you or I, or any other American citizen, as an unlawful enemy combatant without an indictment, without jury trial, and just detaining in military detention and try the military tribunal. So the claim really is that he can do anything here at home that he can do on a foreign battlefield. And so this is a serious upping of the ante and a serious increase in the claimed powers of the executive branch, that if you apply it here at home, if you actually were to use it, it would be tantamount to the destruction of the Bill of Rights and the setting aside of the Bill of Rights. And so I can't take it for granted that's not going to happen.
Right. Well, Mr. Rhodes, as you well know, we've seen an intense demonization campaign in the establishment press over the last few weeks, seeking to paint you and your organization as domestic terrorists, with a Newsweek piece from the beginning of this week bringing up Timothy McVeigh and the Hutari militia and every other cliche of domestic terrorism fear-mongering in their attempt to get their readers to associate these things with your organization. What do you think is behind this campaign, and why is the establishment so afraid about a nonviolent group of policemen and servicemen upholding the Constitution?
Well, I think I can only guess that it must be because they have intentions which would require the police and military to obey. They don't like it. They don't want anybody to think for themselves. And they don't want police and military to make independent decisions about what orders they will and will not follow. I can't understand why that would be a problem for them, but they're not going to address why, because they don't address the actual what actual mission is. So instead of targeting what we actually say and arguing against it, instead they attempt to attack us, ad hominem attacks, and try to associate us with white supremacists, which is really, really ironic and kind of silly, because I'm a quarter Mexican and part Apache Indian. It's kind of difficult to turn me into a white supremacist. And so, but they still try. Like that Newsweek article, it mentioned my name for, talked about me for about two sentences, and then it went into this long, five paragraph segment on neo-Nazis and the KKK, and then Timothy McVeigh, of course, and then at the very end, it talked about me again. So it's guilt by association and smear and conflation. This is the standard operating procedure for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the rest of the media is now picking up on it and using the same tool. So this is how you destroy a message: is you don't attack and counter honestly what the actual message is. You instead change it into something it's not. You turn it into something that's a distortion of the organization actually stands for. And I think their fallback pretty much is that we are paranoid. We're spreading baseless conspiracy theories, and also attempting to try to make us look like a militia.
Right. Well, I think any objective observer would see this as a smear campaign against you. And one of the worst examples was on a recent edition of the Rachel Maddow show, where she tried to draw some sort of link between Oath Keepers and the OKC bombing, because you're participating in a Second Amendment rally on April 19th. So for the benefit of those Americans out there who have never opened a history book, perhaps you can tell them the real meaning of April 19th, 1775, and why this is one of the most important dates in American history.
Well, sure. That was the date of the first shots fired in the American Revolution. And the founding generation had already suffered other abuses of their rights: confiscation of property, denial of jury trial, warrantless searches. But it was the attempt to disarm them, April 19, 1775, when the British regulars marched into Lexington and Concord. That was the final spark that caused the fighting that began the American Revolution. And last year, we Oath Keepers were invited by Committees of Safety, a different organization. We were invited to Lexington Green to join them in celebrating our heritage. We went there to honor those who had fought and died on April 19, 1775, and also to renew our oaths on Lexington Green, which is something that wasn't just some kind of new idea we had. This was something that the founding generation had also done. In 1798, militia officers and men gathered on Lexington Green and also greens across the country and renewed their oaths to defend the Constitution. And so we were following that example, going there and holding an oath renewal ceremony. And likewise, April 19th this year, this next Monday, is going to be a march in Washington, D.C. called the Second Amendment March. And it's about the Second Amendment. And they picked that date because, obviously, April 19th, 1775, it was gun confiscation, the attempt at gun confiscation, that led to fighting. So it's very much about the right to bear arms. That's why they picked the date. But now, people like Rachel Maddow would like to associate that date only with Oklahoma City. They essentially want to wipe out our heritage. They want to make it verboten, forbidden for us to practice our heritage or to go and recognize it and celebrate it. They want to wipe that date out from American history. Don't you dare go anywhere and do anything on April 19th. Otherwise, you're celebrating Timothy McVeigh, a mass murderer. So that's their angle. Folks go to Lexington, Massachusetts by the thousands to go celebrate Patriots Day. I don't see Rachel Maddow up there haranguing them about celebrating the Oklahoma City bombing. Maybe we should get to them next year. Who knows? But for now, she's attacking us. If we do anything April 19th, we're all about McVeigh, according to her.
Absolutely. It's remarkable to me that any American could seriously suggest that a group just holding a Second Amendment rally on this date are somehow inspired by Timothy McVeigh, and I can't believe that this type of nonsense has any traction with the public. So what kind of response have you been getting to these types of smear campaigns, both from your own members and from the public?
Well, from our members, it just makes them angry and increases their resolve. We look at it like this. The more flack we get, it just means we're over the target. So there must be something we're doing right. It makes them so angry and so afraid of us that they would resort to these outright lies. And it's like watching something out of George Orwell. you know, 2 minutes of hate. And this is what they're trying to do, is condition the public to associate my face, my name, and my organization with something disgusting, a mass murderer, Timothy McVeigh, as though a bunch of police officers and military men would actually get together to celebrate, you know, the murder of kids and innocent people. So, you know, this is their attack. And so what is it about our mission they don't like? I think they don't like, in fact, I know this, Potok in particular, they don't like Oath Keepers because they believe that people should just obey the government blindly. They don't want anyone second-guessing comparing orders to the Constitution, making a decision whether to follow them or not. Now that they have political power, especially, the political left, sadly enough, have this mindset. While during the Bush years, they were quoting Ben Franklin and running around quoting the Founding Fathers and screaming and yelling about the Bill of Rights, now that they're in power, it's like a bizarro world. Now they can do anything they want, and if you dare to question Obama, you must be racist or you must be some kind of crazy militia guy. So that's their tone. It's pretty sad.
Right, but nonetheless, you have canceled your planned appearance at the Restore the Constitution rally in Virginia. What was your reasoning behind the decision to pull out of that rally?
Well, we had been to several open carry rallies, so it's not open carry that was a problem. We've been to a rally in Montana. My state director there, state president there in Montana, carried his revolver on his hip, and we've been to one in Kentucky. So open carry was fine, but the rhetoric from some of the people who were going to be speaking there and participating in the march began to shift towards, this is a march about confronting the government and scaring the crap out of D.C. and basically posing a warning. And that's not what we're about. We're not focused on posing a warning to the government. We're focused on the people within the government, getting them to obey their oath. And it's a very peaceful way of avoiding conflict in the first place. And so we felt it would be destructive to Oath Keepers' mission, our ability to carry that mission out, if we allow ourselves to be lumped in and perceived as being militia. So we're not trying to denigrate the people that are going there, what they're trying to say. It's just not our mission. It's not our mission to be a militia or to be an armed body of people that oppose the government. And so the rhetoric started to change in the march, and we decided it was not in harmony with our mission.
Well, I laud that decision because I think it's important to be thinking of these types of things at this time, especially with so much media scrutiny. And I think it's self-evident to me that your group is being positioned so that anything that happens at these types of rallies or events can be blamed on your group specifically, regardless of your participation in the rallies or even your presence at these events. And we know there are groups like CrashTheTeaParty.org that are seeking to infiltrate the Tea Party in order to act poorly in that movement's name. So there are all sorts of dirty tricks going on at this time, and I'd like to give you a chance to go on record with a clear and unequivocal statement about your group's intentions and the purpose of participating in these rallies and events and the nonviolent nature of what you're doing. So I'll give you the floor. Anything you want to say that you think might be beneficial to put on the record at this point?
Well, it's kind of frustrating because we get attacked by people on our side, too. They're saying, when are you going to go and fix things in D.C.? And my response to them is always, it's not up to the military to fix these problems. You would not want a military coup. It'd be like jumping from the frying pan into the fire. So this organization is not about the military fixing things for the American people. It's their own responsibility to fix things. The purpose of Oath Keepers is to make sure the military and police are not used as tools of oppression against you, to make sure that there's a certain line that's not crossed, to preserve your ability to change things through the electoral process. And so that's what we are doing, is holding a line within the ranks of the military, within the ranks of the police, not standing in opposition to them like a militia might be, but instead working within the ranks of the military and police to get them to put the brakes on themselves and refuse to do certain things that would lead to another revolution. We want to avoid bloodshed, and so we want to do this very peacefully. If they say no to the next Kent State or the next Katrina gun confiscation, if they say no to these things, that will reduce the chance of violence. That will reduce the fear and reduce the anxiety Americans feel about their government and give us a chance to, you know, do things peacefully through the electoral process. And so that's what our purpose is. And so some folks don't understand that. They want us to be everything. They want us to be a militia. They want us to be, you know, out there beating our chests and doing a frontal assault. And what we're about is more of a much more quiet and, I think, more powerful missing piece of the puzzle, which is to focus on the military and police and make sure that they obey the Constitution themselves, rather than you forcing them to.
Right. So my understanding of the organization, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this is not a movement that's about action per se, but about refusing to act on unconstitutional orders specifically.
That's right. And like I said earlier, you would not want the military to try to fix things. That'd be a military coup. So what you want them to do is stand down and refuse to be used against the people. That's what you want them to do. And that's a big deal. Getting them, if you could actually achieve having the military and police simply say no if they're given orders to go and round people up or to fire Americans, that'd be a huge, huge advantage for anybody out there who's fighting for freedom. And so that's our focus, is making sure that they will not let themselves be used against you, the people. But that's it. Yeah, it's very nonviolent, very peaceful.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't agree more with your motives and your philosophy. So if people want to support the Oath Keepers, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can go on our website, oathkeepers.org. We do take donations, but what they can probably do that's even more beneficial is go to our resources page and print up flyers and brochures and cards and hand those out to any active duty military police that you know. One other thing they can do is go and get a billboard at a, near a military base. Go get a billboard, rent it, contact us. We'll send you the artwork to put on the billboard, and you can put up a board, something that says, like, honor your oath, and then give the link to the website. So things like that are what's most beneficial. Getting the message of the Constitution out to the current serving is the heart and soul of it. But if they want to donate money, of course, we take donations, too. And if they want to join, they can also join either as full members, which requires them to have been prior service or current service, military, police, or firefighters, or they can join as associate members in support of our mission. So even if a person's never sworn an oath before in their life in official capacity, they can join as an associate member.
And for those in the D.C. area, can you give them some details about the Second Amendment March?
Well, it's going to be April 19th, begins at 10 o'clock a.m. They can go to secondamendmentmarch.com and find out more details there. But April 19th is next Monday at 10 a.m. Right in front of the Washington Monument. And I believe I speak about 12:30, 12:45, somewhere in there. And there'll be Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America will be speaking. Richard Mack, Sheriff Richard Mack, will be speaking. We have a sheriff candidate from Orange County. Bill Hunt will be speaking, and several other good speakers will be there as well. And Skip Coriel, the guy who organized the march in the first place.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, Stuart Rhodes, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're extremely busy right now with lots of media and things going on. So once again, thank you for taking the time, and thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.